fainted, trembling with the need to run and the fear of being caught, marking the endless time by the sleeping breath of the outsiders. Shy's quick and even, and Savian's crackling loud in his chest, and the ghost woman prone to mutter as she turned, more to say when she was sleeping than waking. Until the old man Sweet, who she took for the slowest runner among them, was roused for his watch and grumbled to a place on the other side of their camp. Then she tapped Evan's shoulder, and he nodded to her and prodded the others, and in a silent row they stole away into the darkness. She shook Pitt awake, and he sat.
"Time to go."
But he only blinked.
"Time to go,"
she hissed, squeezing his arm. He shook his head.
"No."
She dragged him up, and he struggled and shouted,
"I won't go! Shy!"
And someone flung back their blankets, a can clattering, all commotion, and Ro let go Pitt's hand and ran, floundering in the snow, away into the trees, caught her boot on a root and tumbled over and over and up and on. Struggling, striving, this time she would get free. Then a terrible weight took her around the knees and she fell. She screeched and kicked and punched, but she might as well have struggled with a stone, with a tree, with the mighty earth itself. The weight was around her hips, then her chest, trapping her helpless. She thought she saw Evan, as the snow swirled, looking back, and she strained towards him with one hand and shouted,
"Help me!"
Then he was lost in the darkness. Or she was.
"Damn you!"
Rose snarled, and wept and twisted, but all in vain. She heard Lamb's voice in her ear.
"I'm already damned, but I ain't letting you go again."
And he held her so tight she could scarcely move, could scarcely breathe. So that was all. Part 5. Trouble. Each land in the world produces its own men individually bad, and in time other bad men who kill them for the general good. Emerson Hough. The Tally. They smelled Beacon long before they saw it. A waft of cooking meat set the famished column shambling downhill through the trees, men slipping and barging and knocking each other over in their haste, sending snow showering. An enterprising hawker had set sticks of meat to cook high up on the slope above the camp. Alas for her, the mercenaries were in no mood to pay, and, brushing her protests aside, plundered every shred of gristle as efficiently as a horde of locusts. Even meat as yet uncooked was fought over and wolfed down. One man had his hand pressed into the glowing brazier in the commotion, and knelt moaning in the snow, clutching his black-striped palm, as Temple labored past, hugging himself against the cold.
"What a set of men," muttered Shy. "Richer than Herman, and they'd still rather steal."
"Doing wrong gets to be a habit," answered Temple, teeth chattering.
The smell of profit must have drifted all the way to Crease, because the camp itself was positively booming. Several more barrows had been dug out, and several new shacks thrown up, and their chimneys busily smoking. More peddlers had set up shop, and more whores set down mattress, all crowding happily out to offer succor to the brave conquerors, price lists surreptitiously amended, as salesmen noticed, all avaricious amaze, the weight of gold and silver with which the men were burdened. Cosca was the only one mounted, leading the procession on an exhausted mule.
"Greetings!"
He delved into his saddlebag and, with a carefree flick of the wrist, sent a shower of ancient coins into the air.
And a happy birthday to you all!
A stall was toppled, pots and pans clattering as people dived after the pinging coins, huddled about the hooves of the old man's mount and jostling each other like pigeons around a handful of seed. An emaciated fiddler, undeterred by his lack of a full complement of strings, struck up a merry jig and capered among the mercenaries, toothlessly grinning. Beneath that familiar sign proclaiming Mahood and Kernsbeck Metalwork, to which had been carefully added weapons and armour manufactured and repaired, stood Abram Mahood, a couple of hirelings keeping the patent portable forge aglow on a narrow strip of ground behind him.
"You've found a new plot," said Temple.
"A small one. Would you build me a house upon it?"
"Perhaps later."
Temple clasped the merchant's hand and thought, with some nostalgia, of an honest day's work done for a half-honest master. Nostalgia was becoming a favoured hobby of his. Strange how the best moments of our lives we scarcely notice, except in looking back.
"And are these the children?"
asked Mahood, squatting down before Pitt and Roe.
"We found them,"
said Shai, without displaying much triumph.
"I am glad."
Mahood offered the boy his hand.
"You must be Pitt."
"I am,"
he said, solemnly shaking.
"And you, Roe?"
The girl frowned away and did not answer.
"She is," said Shai. "Or was."
Mahood slapped his knees.
"And I am sure we'll be again. People change."
"You sure?"
asked Temple. The merchant put a hand on his shoulder.
"Does not the proof stand before me?"
He was wondering whether that was a joke or a compliment when Koska's familiar shriek grated at his ear.
"Temple!"
"Your master's voice?" said Shai.
Where was the purpose in disputing it? Temple nodded his apologies and slunk off towards the fort like the beaten dog he was. He passed a man ripping a cooked chicken apart with his hands, face slick with grease. Two others fought over a flask of ale, accidentally pulled the stopper, and a third dived between them, mouth open, in a vain effort to catch the spillings. A cheer rang out as a whore was hoisted up on three men's shoulders, festooned with ancient gold, a coronet clasped lopsided to her head and screeching,
"I'm the Queen of the fucking Union! I'm the fucking Queen of the fucking Union!"
"I'm glad to see you well." Sawbreck clapped him on the arm with what felt like genuine warmth.
"Alive, at least."
It had been some time since Temple last felt well.
"How was it?"
Temple considered that.
"No stories of heroism for you to record, I fear. I've given up hope of finding any."
"I find hope is best abandoned early," muttered Temple. The old man was beckoning his three captains into a conspiratorial and faintly unpleasant-smelling huddle in the shadow of Superior Pike's great fortified wagon.
"My trusted friends,"
he said, starting as he would continue with a lie.
"We stand upon the heady pinnacle of attainment, but, speaking as one who has often done so, there is no more precarious perch, and those that lose their footing have far to fall. Success tests a friendship far more keenly than failure. We must be doubly watchful of the men and triply cautious in our dealings with all outsiders."
"Agreed," nodded Braccio, jowls trembling.
"Indeed," sneered Dimbic, sharp nose pinked by the cold.
"God knows it,"
rumbled Joubert, eyes rolling to the sky.
"How can I fail with three such pillars to support me? The first order of business must be to collect the booty. If we leave it with the men, they will have frittered the majority away to these vultures by first light."
Men cheered as a great butt of wine was tapped, red spots spattering the snow beneath, and began happily handing over 10 times the price of the entire barrel for each mug poured. "By that time they will probably find themselves in considerable debt," observed Dimbik, slicking back a loose strand of hair with a dampened fingertip.
"I suggest we gather the valuables without delay. Then, observed by us all, counted by Sergeant Friendly, notarized by Master Temple, and stored in this wagon under triple lock."
And Koska thumped the solid wood of which the wagon was made, as though to advertise the good sense and dependability of his suggestion.
"Dimbik, set your most loyal men to guard it."
Braccio watched a fellow swing a golden chain around his head, jewels sparkling.
"The men won't hand their prizes over happily."
"They never do. But if we stand together and provide enough distractions, they will succumb. How many do we number now, Friendly?"
143, said the sergeant.
Joubert shook his heavy head at the faithlessness of mankind.
"The company dwindles alarmingly."
"We can afford no further desertions," said Koska. "I suggest all mounts be gathered, corralled, and closely watched by trusted guards."
"Risky."
Braccio scratched worriedly at the crease between his chins.
"There are some skittish ones among them."
"There's horses for you. See it done. Joubert, I want a dozen of your best in position to make sure our little surprise goes to plan."
"Already awaiting your word."
"What surprise?" asked Temple. God knew he was not sure he could endure any further excitement. The Captain General grinned.
"A surprise shared is no surprise at all. Don't worry, I feel sure you'll approve."
Temple was in no way reassured. His idea of a good thing and Koska's intersected less with every passing day.
"Each to our work, then, while I address the men."
As he watched his three captains move off, Koska's smile slowly faded, leaving him with eyes narrowed to slits of suspicion.
"I don't trust those bastards further than I could shit."
"No,"
said Friendly.
"No,"
said Temple. Indeed, the only man he trusted less stood beside him now.
"I want the two of you to account for the treasure, every brass bit properly tallied, noted, and stored away."
"Counted,"
said Friendly.
"Absolutely, my old friend. And see to it also that there is food and water in the wagon and a team of horses hitched and at the ready. If things turn ugly here, we may require a swift exit."
8 horses,
said Friendly.
4 pairs.
"Now help me up. I have a speech to make."
With a great deal of grimacing and grumbling, the old man managed to clamber onto the seat, and then the roof of the wagon, fists bunched upon its wooden parapet, facing out into the camp. By that stage, those not already thoroughly occupied had begun a chant in his honour, weapons, bottles, and half-devoured morsels shaken at the evening sky. Tiring of their burden, they unceremoniously deposed the newly crowned Queen of the Union screeching in the mud, and plundered her of her borrowed valuables.
"Koska! Koska! Koska!"
they roared, as the Captain General removed his hat, smoothed the white wisps across his pate, and spread his arms wide to receive their adulation. Someone seized the beggar's fiddle and smashed it to pieces, then further ensured his silence with a punch in the mouth.
"My honored companions!"
bellowed the old man. Time might have dulled some of his faculties, but the volume of his voice was unimpaired.
"We have done well!"
A rousing cheer. Someone threw money in the air, provoking an ugly scuffle.
"Tonight we celebrate! Tonight we drink and sing and revel as befits a triumph worthy of the heroes of old."
Further cheers and brotherly embraces and slapping of backs. Temple wondered whether the heroes of old would have celebrated the herding of a few dozen ancients from a cliff. More than likely, that's heroes for you. Koska held up a gnarled hand for quiet, eventually achieved, aside from the soft sucking sounds of a couple who were beginning the celebrations early.
Before the revelry, however, I regret that there must be an accounting.
An immediate change in mood.
Each man will surrender his booty.
Angry mutterings now broke out.
All his booty.
Angrier yet.
No swallowed jewels, no coins up arses. No one wants to have to look for them there.
A few distinct boos.
That our majestic hall may be properly valued, recorded, safely kept under triple lock in this very wagon, to be dispersed as appropriate when we have reached civilization.
The mood now verged on the ugly. Temple noted some of Joubert's men threading watchfully through the crowd.
We start out tomorrow morning, roared Koska. But for tonight, each man will receive 100 marks as a bonus to spend as he sees fit.
Some amelioration of the upset at that.
Let us not spoil our triumph with sour dissent. Remain united, and we can leave this benighted country rich beyond the dreams of greed. Turn against each other, and failure, shame, and death will be our just deserts.
Oscar thumped one fist against his breastplate.
I think, as ever, only of the safety of our noble brotherhood. The sooner your booty is tallied, the sooner the fun begins.
What of the rebels?
Rang out a piercing voice. Inquisitor Lawson was shoving his way through the press towards the wagon, and from the look on his gaunt face, the fun would not be starting any time soon.
Where are the rebels, Koska?
The rebels? Ah, yes, the strangest thing. We scoured Ashrank from top to bottom. Would you use the word scoured, Temple?
I would, said Temple. They had smashed anything that might hold a coin, let alone a rebel.
But no sign of them, growled Lawson.
We were deceived.
Koska thumped the parapet in frustration.
Damn, but these rebels are a slippery crowd. The alliance between them and the dragon people was a ruse.
Their ruse or yours?
Inquisitor, you wrong me. I am as disappointed as you are.
I hardly think so, snapped Lawson. You have lined your own pockets, after all.
Koska spread his hands in helpless apology.
That's mercenaries for you.
A scattering of laughter from the company, but their employer was in no mood to participate.
You have made me an accomplice to robbery, to murder, to massacre.
I held no dagger to your neck. Superior Pike did ask for chaos, as I recall.
To a purpose. You have perpetrated mindless slaughter.
Mindful slaughter would surely be even worse.
Koska burst out in a chuckle, but Lawson's black-masked practicals, scattered about the shadows, lacked all sense of humour. The Inquisitor waited for silence.
Do you believe in anything?
Not if I can help it. Belief alone is nothing to be proud of, Inquisitor. Belief without evidence is the very hallmark of the savage.
Lawson shook his head in amazement.
You truly are disgusting.
I would be the last to disagree, but you fail to see that you are worse. No man capable of greater evil than the one who thinks himself in the right. No purpose more evil than the higher purpose. I freely admit I am a villain. That's why you hired me. But I am no hypocrite.
Koska gestured at the ragged remnants of his company, fallen silent to observe the confrontation.
I have mouths to feed. You could just go home. If you're set on doing good, make something to be proud of. Open a bakery. Fresh bread every morning. There's a noble cause.
Inquisitor Lawson's thin lip curled.
There truly is nothing in you of what separates man from animal, is there? You are bereft of conscience, an utter absence of morality. You have no principle beyond the selfish.
Koska's face hardened as he leaned forwards.
Perhaps when you have faced as many disappointments and suffered as many betrayals as I, you will see it. There is no principle beyond the selfish, Inquisitor, and men are animals. Conscience is a burden we choose to bear. Morality is the lie we tell ourselves to make its bearing easier. There have been many times in my life when I have wished it was not so, but it is so.
Lawson slowly nodded, bright eyes fixed on Koska.
There will be a price for this.
I'm counting on it. Though it seems an almost ludicrous irrelevance now, Superior Pike promised me 50,000 marks.
For the capture of the rebel leader Conthus.
Indeed. And there he is.
There was a scraping of steel, a clicking of triggers, a rattling of armor, as a dozen of Joubert's men stepped forward. A circle of drawn swords, loaded flat bows, leveled pole arms, all suddenly pointed in towards Lamb, Sweet, Shy, and Savian. Gently, Mahood drew the wide-eyed children close to him.
"Master Savian," called Koska, "I deeply regret that I must ask you to lay down your weapons, any and all, if you please."
Betraying no emotion, Savian slowly reached up to undo the buckle on the strap across his chest, flat bow and bolts clattering to the mud. Lamb watched him do it, and calmly bit into a leg of chicken. No doubt that was the easy way, to stand and watch. God knew Temple had taken that way often enough. Too often, perhaps. He dragged himself up onto the wagon to hiss in Koska's ear.
"You don't have to do this."
"Have to? No."
"Please, how does it help you?"
"Help me?"
The old man raised one brow at Temple as Savian unbuttoned his coat and one by one shed his other weapons.
"It helps me, not at all. That is the very essence of selflessness and charity."
Temple could only stand blinking.
"Are you not always telling me to do the right thing?" asked Koska. "Did we not sign a contract? Did we not accept Inquisitor Lawson's noble cause as our own? Did we not lead him a merry chase up and down this forsaken gulf of distance? Pray be silent, Temple. I never thought to say this, but you are impeding my moral growth."
He turned away to shout,
"Would you be kind enough to roll up your sleeves, Master Savian?"
Savian cleared his throat, metal rattling as the mercenaries nervously shifted, took the button at his collar and undid it, then the next, the fighters and peddlers and whores all watching the drama unfold in silence. Hedges, too, Temple noticed, for some reason with a smile of feverish delight on his face. Savian shrugged his shirt off and stood stripped to the waist, and his whole body, from his pale neck to his pale hands, was covered in writing, in letters large and tiny, in slogans in a dozen languages. "Death to the Union, death to the King. The only good Middlelander is a dead one. Never kneel, never surrender. No mercy, no peace, freedom, justice, blood." He was blue with them.
"I only asked for the sleeves," said Koska, "but I feel the point is made."
Savian gave the faintest smile.
"What if I said I'm not Conthus?"
"I doubt we'd believe you."
The old man looked over at Lawson, who was staring at Savian with a hungry intensity.
"In fact, I very much doubt we would. Do you have any objections, Master Sweet?"
Sweet blinked around at all that sharpened metal and opted for the easy way.
"Not me. I'm shocked as anyone at this surprising turn of events."
"You must be quite discomforted to learn you've been travelling with a mass murderer all this time."
Koska grinned.
"Well, two, in fact. Aye, Master Lamb."
The Northman still picked at his drumstick as though there was no steel pointed in his direction.
"Anything to say on behalf of your friend?"
"Most of my friends I've killed," said Lamb around a mouthful.
I came for the children. The rest is mud. Koska pressed one sorry hand to his breastplate.
I have stood where you stand, Master Savian, and entirely sympathize. We all are alone in the end.
It's a hard fucking world, said Savian, looking neither right nor left.
Seize him, growled Lawson, and his practicals swarmed forwards like dogs off the leash.
For a moment it looked as if Shai's hand was creeping towards her knife, but Lam held her arm with his free hand, eyes on the ground, as the practicals marched Savian towards the fort. Inquisitor Lawson followed them inside, smiled grimly out into the camp, and slammed the door with a heavy bang. Koska shook his head.
Not even so much as a thank you. Doing right is a dead-end, Temple, as I have often said. Cue up, my boys! It's time for an accounting!
Braccio and Dimbig began to circulate, ushering the men into a grumbling queue, the excitement of Savian's arrest already fading. Temple stared across at Shai, and she stared back at him, but what could either of them do?
We will need sacks and boxes,
Koska was shouting.
Open the wagon and find a table for the count. A door on trestles, then, good enough. Swarbrick, fetch pen and ink and ledger. Not the writing you came to do, but no less honourable a task.
Deeply honoured, croaked the writer, looking slightly sick.
We'd best be heading out.
Dab Sweet had made his way over to the wagon and was looking up.
Get the children back to Kreese, I reckon.
Of course, my friend, said Koska, grinning down. You will be sorely missed. Without your skills, let alone the fearsome talents of Master Lam, the task would have been nigh impossible. The tall tales don't exaggerate in your cases, eh, Swarbrick?
They're legends made flesh, Captain General, mumbled the writer.
We will have to give them a chapter to themselves, perhaps two. The very best of luck to you and your companions. I will recommend you wherever I go.
Koska turned away, as though that concluded their business. Sweet looked to Temple, and Temple could only shrug. There was nothing he could do about this, either. The old scout cleared his throat.
There's just the matter of our share of the proceeds. As I recall, we discussed a 20th.
What about my share?
Cantliss elbowed his way past Sweet to stare up.
It was me told you there'd be rebels up there, me who found those bastards out.
Why, so you did,
said Koska.
You're a veritable child-stealing prophet, and we owe you all our success.
Cantliss's bloodshot eyes lit with a fire of greed.
So, what am I due?
Friendly stepped up from behind, innocuously slipped a noose over his head, and, as Cantliss glanced around, Joubert hauled with all his considerable weight on the rope, which had been looped over a beam projecting from the side of the broken tower. Hemp grated as the bandit was hoisted off his feet. One kicking foot knocked a black spray of ink across Swarbrick's ledger, and the writer stumbled up, ashen-faced, as Cantliss pawed feebly at the noose with his broken hand, eyes bulging.
"Paid in full!" shouted Koska.
Some of the mercenaries half-heartedly cheered. A couple laughed. One threw an apple core and missed. Most barely raised an eyebrow.
"Oh, God!"
whispered Temple, picking at the stitching on his buttons and staring at the tarred planks under his feet. But he could still see Cantliss's squirming shadow there.
Oh, God!
Friendly wound the rope about a tree stump and tied it off. Hedges, who'd been shoving his way towards the wagon, cleared his throat and carefully retreated, smiling no longer. Shai spat through the gap in her front teeth and turned away. Lam stood watching, until Cantliss stopped twisting about, one hand resting slack on the hilt of the sword he had taken from the dragon people. Then he frowned towards the door through which Savian had been taken and flicked his stripped chicken bone into the mud.
17 times,
said Friendly, frowning up.
17 times what?
Asked Koska.
He kicked. not counting that last one.
That last one was more of a twitch, said Joubert.
Is 17 a lot? Asked the old man. Friendly shrugged.
About average.
Koska looked down at Sweet, grey brows high. You were saying something about a share, I think?
The old scout watched Cantlis creaking back and forth, with a hooked finger gently loosened his collar, and opted for the easy way again.
Must have misremembered. Reckon I'll just be heading on back to Crease, if that's all the same with you.
As you wish.
Below them, the first man in line upended his pack and sent gold and silver sliding across the table in a glittering heap. The Captain General plumped his hat back on and flicked the feather.
Happy journey!
Going back.
That fucking old shitfucker!
Snarled Sweet, slashing with a stick at a branch that hung over the road and showering snow all over himself.
Prick 'em all fucking cocksker! That bastard old arsehole fucker!
You said that one already, as I recall, muttered Shy.
He said old arsehole bastard fucker, said Crying Rock.
My mistake, said Shy. That's a whole different thing.
Ain't fucking disagreeing, are you?
Snapped Sweet.
No, I'm not, said Shy. He's a hell of a fucker, all right.
Shit, fuck, shit, fuck!
And Sweet kicked at his horse and whipped at the tree trunks in a rage as he passed.
I'll get even with that maggot-eaten bastard, I can tell you that!
Let it be, grunted Lamb. Some things you can't change. You gotta be realistic.
That was my damn retirement got stole there.
Still breathing, ain't you?
Easy for you to say. You didn't lose no fortune.
Lamb gave him a look.
I lost plenty.
Sweet worked his mouth for a moment, then shouted,
Fuck!
One last time, and flung his stick away into the trees. A cold and heavy quiet, then. The iron tires of Mahood's wagon scraping, and some loose part in Kernsbeck's apparatus in the back clank-clanking under its canvas cover, and the horse's hooves crunch-crunching in the snow on the road, rutted from the business flowing up from Crease. Pitt and Roe lay in the back under a blanket, faces pressed up against each other, peaceful now in sleep. Shy watched them rocking gently as the axles shifted.
I guess we did it, she said.
Aye, said Lamb, but looking a long stretch short of a celebration. Guess so.
They rounded another long bend, road switching back one last time as it dropped down steep off the hills, the stream beside, half frozen, white ice creeping out jagged from each bank to almost meet in the middle. Shy didn't want to say anything, but once a thought was in her head, she'd never been much good at keeping it there. And this thought had been pricking at her ever since they left Beacon.
They're going to be cutting into him, ain't they? Asking questions.
Savian.
Who else?
The scarred side of Lamb's face twitched a little.
That's a fact.
Ain't a pretty one.
Facts don't tend to be.
He saved me.
Aye.
He saved you.
True.
We really gonna fucking leave him, then?
Lamb's face twitched again, jaw muscles working as he frowned out hard across the country ahead. The trees were thinning as they dropped out of the mountains, the moon fat and full in a clear sky star-dusted, spilling light over the high plateau. A great flat expanse of dry dirt and thorny scrub looked like it could never have held life, all half-carpeted now with sparkling snow. Through the midst, straight as a sword-cut, the white strip of the old Imperial Road, a scar through the country angling off towards Crease, wedged somewhere in the black rumour of hills on the horizon. Lamb's horse slowed to a walk, then stopped.
"Shall we halt?" asked Mahood.
You told me you'd be my friend for life, said Lam. The merchant blinked.
And I meant it.
Then keep on. Lam turned in his saddle to look back. Behind them, somewhere high up in the folded, forested ridges, there was a glow. The great bonfire the mercenaries had stacked high in the middle of Beacon to light their celebrations.
Got a good road here and a good moon to steer by. Keep on all night, quick and steady. You might make Crease by dark tomorrow.
Why the rush?
Lam took a long breath, looked to the starry sky, and breathed out smoke in a grumbling sigh.
There's going to be trouble.
We going back?
Asked Shai.
You're not.
The shadow of his hat fell across his face as he looked at her, so his eyes were just two gleams.
I am.
What?
You're taking the children. I'm going back.
You always were, weren't you?
He nodded.
Just wanted to get us far away.
I've only had a few friends, Shai. I've done right by even fewer. Could count them on one hand.
He turned his left hand over and looked at the stump of his missing finger.
Even this one. This is how it has to be.
Ain't nothing has to be. I ain't letting you go alone.
Yes, you are.
He eased his horse closer, looking her in the eye.
Do you know what I felt when we came over that hill and saw the farm all burned out? The first thing I felt before the sorrow and the fear and the anger caught up.
She swallowed, her mouth all sticky dry, not wanting to answer, not wanting to know the answer.
Joy, whispered Lam. Joy and relief. Because I knew right off what I'd have to do, what I'd have to be. Knew right off I could put an end on 10 years of lying. A man's got to be what he is, Shai.
He looked back at his hand and made a three-fingered fist of it.
I don't feel evil. But the things I done, what else can you call them?
You ain't evil, she whispered. You're just...
If it hadn't been for Savion, I'd have killed you in them caves. You and Ro.
Shai swallowed. She knew it well enough.
If it hadn't been for you, we'd never have got the children back.
Lam looked at the pair of them, Ro with her arm over Pit. Stubble of hair showing dark now, almost grown over the scratch down her scalp. Both so changed.
Did we get them back?
He asked, and his voice was rough.
Sometimes I think we just lost us too.
I'm who I was.
Lam nodded, and it seemed he had the glimmer of tears in his eyes.
You are, maybe. But I don't reckon there's any going back for me.
He leaned from his saddle then and hugged her tight.
I love you. And them. But my love ain't a weight anyone should have to carry. Best of luck, Shai. The very best.
And he let her go and turned his horse and he rode away, following their tracks back towards the trees and the hills and the reckoning beyond.
What the hell happened to being realistic?
She called after him. He stopped just a moment, a lonely figure in all that moonlit white.
Always sounded like a good idea, but being honest, it never worked for me.
Slow and numb, Shai turned her back on him. Turned her back and rode on across the plateau after the wagon and Mahood's hired men. After Sweet and Crying Rock, staring at the white road ahead, but seeing nothing. Tongue working at the gap between her teeth. And the night air cold, cold in her chest with each breath. Cold and empty. Thinking about what Lam had said to her. What she'd said to Savion. Thinking about all the long miles she'd covered the last few months. And the dangers she'd faced to get this far. And not knowing what she could do. This was how it had to be. except when folk told Chai how things had to be, she started thinking on how to make them otherwise. The wagon hit a lump, and with a clatter, Pitt got jolted awake. He sat up, and he stared blinking about him, and said, "Where's Lamb?" And Shai's hands went slack on the reins, and she let her horse slow, then stop, and she sat there, solemn. Mahood looked over his shoulder.
"Lamb said, keep on. You gotta do what he tells you? He ain't your father, is he?"
"I suppose not," said the merchant, pulling up the horses.
"He's mine," muttered Shai.
And there it was. Maybe he wasn't the father she'd want, but he was still the only one she'd got. The only one all three of them had got. She'd enough regrets to live with.
"I've got to go back," she said.
"Madness!"
snapped Sweet, sitting his horse not far off.
"Bloody madness!"
"No doubt. And you're coming with me."
A silence.
"You know, there's more than 100 mercenaries up there, don't you? Killers, every man."
"The dab Sweet I heard stories of wouldn't take fright at a few mercenaries."
"Don't know if you noticed, but the dab Sweet you heard stories of ain't much like the one wearing my coat."
"I hear you used to be." She rode up to him and reined in close. "I hear you used to be quite a man." Crying Rock slowly nodded.
"That is true."
Sweet frowned at the old ghost woman, and frowned at Shai, and finally frowned at the ground, scratching at his beard, and bit by bit slumping down in his saddle.
"Used to be. You're young and got dreams ahead of you still. You don't know how it is. One day you're something, so promising and full of dares, so big the world's too small a place to hold you. Then, before you know it, you're old, and you realize all them things you had in mind you'll never get to. All them doors you felt too big to fit through have already shut. Only one left open, and it leads to nothing but nothing."
He pulled his hat off and scrubbed at his white hair with his dirty nails.
"You lose your nerve. And once it's gone, where do you find it?" "I got scared, Shy South. And once you get scared, there ain't no going back. There just ain't no—"
Shy caught a fist of his fur coat and dragged him close.
"I ain't giving up this way, you hear me? I just ain't fucking having it. Now I need that bastard who killed a red bear with his hands up at the source of the Sequoia, whether it bloody well happened or not. You hear me, you old shit?"
He blinked at her for a moment.
"I hear you."
"Well, you want to get even with Kosker, or you just want to swear about it?"
Crying Rock had brought her horse close.
"Maybe do it for Leaf," she said. "And those others buried on the plains."
Sweet stared at her weather-beaten face for a long moment, for some reason with the strangest, haunted look in his eye. Then his mouth twitched into a smile.
"How come, after all this time, you're still so damn beautiful?" he asked.
Crying Rock just shrugged, like facts were facts, and stuck a pipe between her teeth. Sweet reached up and brushed Shai's hand away. He straightened his fur coat. He leaned from his saddle and spat. He looked with narrowed eyes up towards Beacon and set his jaw.
"If I get killed, I'm going to haunt your skinny ass for life."
"If you get killed, I doubt my life will be too long a stretch."
Shai slipped down from her saddle and crunched stiff leg to the wagon, stood looking down at her brother and sister.
"Got something to take care of,"
she said, putting a gentle hand on each of them.
"You go on with Mahood. He's a little on the stingy side, but he's one of the good ones."
"Where are you going?"
asked Pitt.
"Left something behind."
"Will you be long?"
She managed to smile.
"Not long." "I'm sorry, Roe. I'm sorry for everything."
"So am I,"
said Roe. Maybe that was something. For sure it was all she'd get. She touched Pitt's cheek, just a brush with her fingertips.
I'll see you two in Crease. You'll hardly notice I'm gone.
Rose sniffed, sleepy and sullen, and wouldn't meet her eye, and Pitt stared at her, face all tracked with tears. She wondered if she really would see them in Crease. Madness, like Sweet said, to come all this way just to let them go. But there was no point to long goodbyes. Sometimes it's better to do a thing than live with the fear of it. That's what Lamb used to say.
Go!
She shouted at Mahood before she had the chance to change her mind. He nodded to her and snapped the reins, and the wagon rolled on.
Better to do it,
she whispered at the night sky, and she clambered back into her saddle, turned her horse about, and gave it her heels. Answered Prayers. Temple drank. He drank like he had after his wife died, as if there was something at the bottom of the bottle he desperately needed, as if it was a race he had bet his life on, as if drinking was a profession he planned on rising right to the top of. Tried most of the others, hadn't he?
You should stop, said Swarbrick, looking worried.
You should start, said Temple, and laughed, even if he'd never felt like laughing less. Then he burped, and there was some sick in it, and he washed the taste away with another swallow.
You have to pace yourself, said Koska, who was not pacing himself in the least. Drinking is an art, not a science. You caress the bottle, you tease it, you romance it. A drink, a drink, a drink.
Kissing at the air with each repetition, eyelids flickering.
Drinking is like love.
What the fuck do you know about love?
More than I'd like,
answered the old man, a faraway look in his yellowed eye, and he gave a bitter laugh.
Despicable men still love, Temple, still feel pain, still nurse wounds. Despicable men, most of all, maybe.
He slapped Temple on the back, sent a searing swig the wrong way, and induced a painful coughing fit.
But let's not be maudlin. We're rich, boy, all rich, and rich men need make no apologies. To Viserine, for me, take back what I lost, what was stolen.
What you threw away,
muttered Temple, quietly enough not to be heard over the racket.
Yes, mused Koska. Soon there'll be space for a new Captain General.
He took in the noisy, crowded, sweltering room with a sweep of his arm.
All this will be yours.
It was quite a scene of debauch to cram into a one-roomed hovel, lit by a single guttering lamp, and hazy with chagger smoke, noisy with laughter and conversations in several languages. Two big Northmen were wrestling, possibly in fun, possibly with the intention of killing each other, people occasionally lurching out of their way. Two natives of the Union and an Imperial bitterly complained as their table was jogged in the midst of a card game, bottles tottering on top. Three Styrians had shared a husk pipe and were blissfully lounging on a burst mattress in one corner, somewhere between sleep and waking. Friendly was sitting with legs crossed and rolling his dice between them, over and over and over, frowning down with furious concentration, as though the answers to everything would soon appear on their dozen faces.
Hold on,
muttered Temple, his pickled mind only now catching up.
Mine?
Who better qualified? You've learned from the best, my boy. You're a lot like me, Temple. I've always said so. Great men march often in the same direction, did Stolicus say?
Like you,
whispered Temple. Koska tapped his greasy grey hair.
Brains, boy, you've got the brains. Your morals can be stiff at times, but they'll soon soften up once you have to make the tough choices. You can talk well, know how to spot people's weaknesses, and above all, you understand the law. The strong-arm stuff's all going out of fashion. I mean, there'll always be a place for it, but the law temple, that's where the money's going to be.
What about Braccio?
Family in Purante.
Really?
Temple blinked across the room at Braccio, who was in a vigorous embrace with a large Cantic woman.
You never mentioned them?
A wife and two daughters. Who talks about their family with scum like us?
What about Dimbic?
No sense of humour.
Joubert?
Mad as the plum jelly.
But I'm no soldier. I'm a fucking coward.
Admirable thing in a mercenary.
Tosca stretched forward his chin and scratched at his rashy neck with the backs of his yellowed nails.
I'd have done far better with a healthy respect for danger. It's not as if you'll be swinging the steel yourself. The job's all talk, blah, 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 and big hats. That, and knowing when not to keep your word.
He wagged a knobbly finger.
I was always too bloody emotional, too bloody loyal. But you are a treacherous bastard, Temple.
I am?
You abandoned me when it suited and found new friends. Then, when it suited, you abandoned them and sauntered straight back without so much as a by your leave.
Temple blinked at that.
I rather had the feeling you'd have killed me otherwise.
Cosco waved it away.
Details. I've had you marked as my successor for some time.
But no one respects me.
Because you don't respect yourself. Doubt, Temple, indecision. You simply worry too much. Sooner or later, you have to do something or you'll never do anything. Overcome that, you could be a wonderful Captain General. One of the greats. Better than me. Better than Sazine. Better than Makato, even. You might want to cut down on the drinking, though.
Cosca tossed his empty bottle away, pulled the cork from another with his teeth, and spat it across the room.
Filthy habit.
I don't want to do this anymore,
Temple whispered. Cosca waved that away, too.
You say that all the time, yet here you are.
Temple lurched up.
Got to piss.
The cold air slapped him so hard he nearly fell against one of the guards, sour-faced from having to stay sober. He stumbled along the wooden side of Superior Pike's monstrous wagon, thinking how close his palm was to a fortune, past the stirring horses, breath steaming out of their nosebags, took a few crunching steps into the trees, sounds of revelry muffled behind him, shoved his bottle down in the frozen snow, and unlaced with drunken fingers. Bloody hell, it was cold still. He leaned back, blinking at the sky, bright stars spinning and dancing beyond the black branches. Captain General Temple. He wondered what Hadish Kadia would have thought of that. He wondered what God thought of it. How had it come to this? He'd always had good intentions, hadn't he? He'd always tried to do his best. It's just that his best had always been shit.
God!
He brayed at the sky.
You up there, you bastard!
Perhaps he was the mean bully Joubert made him out to be, after all.
Just give me a sign, will you? Just a little one. Just steer me the right way. Just give me a nudge.
I'll give you a nudge. He froze for a moment, still dripping.
God? Is that you?
No, fool. There was a crunch as someone pulled his bottle out of the snow. He turned.
I thought you left.
Came back. Shai tipped the bottle up and took a swig, one side of her face all dark, the other lit by the flickering bonfire in the camp.
Thought you'd never come out of there,
she said, wiping her mouth.
Been waiting?
Little while. Are you drunk?
Little bit.
That works for us.
It works for me.
I see that, she said, glancing down. He realized he hadn't laced up yet and started fumbling away.
If you wanted to see my cock that badly, you could have just asked. No doubt a thing of haunting beauty, but I came for something else. Got a window needs jumping through? No. I might need your help. Might? Things run smooth, you can just creep back to drowning your sorrows. How often do things run smooth for you? Not often. Is it likely to be dangerous? Little bit. Really? A little bit? She drank again. No. A lot. It's about Savion. Little bit. Oh, God, he muttered, rubbing at the bridge of his nose and willing the dark world to be still. Doubt. That was his problem. Indecision. Worrying too much. He wished he was less drunk. Then he wished he was more. He'd asked for a sign, hadn't he? Why had he asked for a sign? He'd never expected to get one. What do you need? He muttered, his voice very small. Sharp Ends. Practical Wile slid a finger under his mask to rub at the little chafe marks. Not the worst part of the job, but close. There it is, though, he said, rearranging his cards as if that made his hand any less rotten. I dare say she's found someone else for now. If she's got any sense, grunted Pouth. Wile nearly thumped the table, then worried that he might hurt his hand and stopped short. This is what I mean by undermining. We're supposed to look out for each other, but you're always talking me down. Weren't nothing in the oaths I swore about not talking you down, said Pouth, tossing a couple of cards and sliding a couple more off the deck. Loyalty to His Majesty, threw out Boulder, and obedience to His Eminence, and the ruthless rooting out of treasons, but nothing about looking out for no one. Doesn't mean it's a bad idea, grumbled Wile, rearranging his rotten hand. You're confusing how you'd like the world to be with how it is, said Boulder. Again? A little solidarity is all I'm asking. We're all stuck in the same leaky boat. Start bailing and stop bloody mourning, then. Pals had a good scratch under his own mask. All the way out here you've done nothing but mourn. The food, the cold, your mask sores, your sweetheart, my snoring, Boulder's habits, Lawson's temper. It's enough to make a man quite aggravated. Even if life weren't aggravating enough to begin with, said Ferring, who was out of the game and had been sitting with his boots up on the table for the best part of an hour. Ferring had the most unnatural patience with doing nothing. Pouth eyed him. Your boots are pretty damn aggravating. Ferring eyed him back, those sharp blue eyes of his. Boots is boots. Boots is boots? What does that even mean, boots is boots? If you've nothing worth saying, you two might consider not saying it. Boulder nodded his lump of a head towards the prisoner. Take a page out of his book. The old man hadn't said a word to Lawson's questions, hadn't done much more than grunt even when they burned him. He just watched, eyes narrowed, raw flesh glistening in the midst of his tattoos. Ferring's eyes shifted over to Wiles. You think you'd take a burn in that well? Wile didn't reply. He didn't like thinking about taking a burning. He didn't like giving one to someone else, whatever oaths he'd sworn, whatever treasons, murders, or massacres the man was meant to have masterminded. One thing holding forth about justice at 1,000 miles removed, another having to press metal into flesh. He just didn't like thinking about it at all. It's a steady living, the Inquisition, his father had told him. Better asking the questions than giving the answers anyway, eh? And they'd laugh together at that, though Wile hadn't found it funny. He used to laugh a lot at unfunny things, his father said. He wouldn't have laughed now. Or maybe that was giving himself too much credit. He'd a bad habit of doing that. Sometimes Wile wondered whether a cause could be right that needed folk burned, cut, and otherwise mutilated.
Hardly the tactics of the just, was it, when you took a step back? Rarely seemed to produce any truly useful results, either, unless pain, fear, hate, and mutilation were what you were after.